Have you ever noticed that when you're really, really sad, your face starts to frown? And that if you ever cry, it's virtually impossible to smile at the same time you're crying. That's because it's difficult to separate emotions from physiology. How you feel is written all over your face and body, like a billboard on the street. If you look at a group of people, it's pretty easy to identify the ones that are depressed. Their whole body is oozing out depression. Their shoulders are rounded over, and they move with a slowness and listlessness that makes them look about 10 years older than they are. The happy people in the room have their chests up, their shoulders back and down, they move around energetically, they walk briskly, they smile a lot, and their faces look younger than their actual age. In the first session, I told you that statistics claim that 55% of what makes you perceived as believable when you're communicating is your physiology, the way you stand, breathe, gesture, walk, what your eyes do, the expressions on your face. All of this and more counts as physiology. So I want to spend some time now and address a few points that might help you stop looking like a lame duck and start looking like the perfect physical specimen that you are. Just remember, being a great communicator is not all about being good looking. If all it takes is great looks to be a star presenter, how come most of the top runway models never get to speak? If having great hair and lips guaranteed the perception of intelligence, then why do we have so many stupid blonde jokes? Yes, my friends, the good news is men don't have to look like Mel Gibson, and women that don't look like Cindy Crawford can still be appealing, charismatic, powerful, entertaining, and enlightening and desirable. As I've said a million times, a lot of it comes down to the way that they sound, how they think, and the way they use their bodies. Let's start out with something easy like how you should or shouldn't gesture with your hands. You may have a great voice and read your audience like a book, but still fall victim to a common habit that undermines your effectiveness. I call this problem parallel gestures. And it involves using both hands in exactly the same way. Instead of slicing the air with one hand to emphasize a point, you slice it with two. Everything one hand does, the other hand mirrors exactly with zero variation. If you point your index finger in front of you at the audience, the index finger on the other hand has to do exactly the same point at exactly the same precise time. And even though you see just about everyone on TV, from presidents and politicians to entertainers and newscasters doing this, they're all making themselves look physically uncomfortable. The effect is extremely comical, though, of course, it's not intended to be. Once you begin to become aware of it, in the course of a normal conversation, our hands move independently. We might lift one hand and then drop it, or point one hand while the other one rests. Observe yourself as you talk with your hands. Did you know that each side of the body is controlled by a different side of the brain? Well, now you do. And guess what? Our gestures should obviously reflect that. So what I mean is, if the left side of the brain is telling my right hand where and how to move, the mind and body are in complete harmony, and vice versa. If the right side of my brain is telling my left hand where and how to move, they're also happy. Now, both sides of the brain don't usually like to send the same message at the same time, so parallel gestures are actually not a natural occurrence. And when nerves enter the equation, it's as though you're standing outside your body and watching yourself, or choreographing your every move. And the second you disconnect your body and your mind, you're in serious trouble. You begin to orchestrate your gestures, and instantly you've created a barrier between yourself and your listeners. Haven't you ever been to a musical at an elementary school? Now, of course, your kids are all stars, that's a given, and they look so cute in their costumes, and they make you cry the second they walk out on stage singing, "Oh, What a Beautiful Morning," but once you get past that, don't you notice the silly hand gestures the teacher told them to make? And that they move around the stage and gesture like bad contestants in the Miss USA pageant. A lot of that is because of parallel gestures. To find out how guilty you are of overdoing parallel gestures, try this exercise. Stand in front of a mirror that allows you to see yourself from at least the waist up. Speak any passage of text you've memorized, or just do the beginning of the Gettysburg Address, which you'll find in the guidebook. Remember, to get an honest read on this, you have to force yourselves to do a lot of hand gestures. If you speak the lines with your arms at your sides, and that's not going to tell us anything we need to know. All right, I'll go first. 87 years ago, our forefathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Okay, now it's your turn. Put the program on pause and try it yourself. Now tell me, what did your hands do? Did they mirror each other? Make a mental note of what you saw. Now go back and say the same passage again. Stop the moment you find yourself making a parallel gesture and let one hand change its position, move one of them up or down or to the side, change something. Continue speaking until you find yourself making another parallel gesture. Stop, again, reposition, and continue. This simple mirror exercise will increase your awareness and let your body know that you're onto its little unconscious habit. Notice the gestures, then stop using them. It's really that simple, and it's really that possible. The next part of your body that I want to talk to you about is your mouth. Now, I love seeing happy faces just as much as the next guy, but there's a special little problem that happens when you speak and smile too much. Let's do another little exercise. I'd like you to use a small hand mirror to check the position of your mouth as you speak. Recite the alphabet and watch what the corners of your mouth are doing. When you reach the letters E and G, do you feel your mouth becoming wide, the corners sort of flaring apart? Some people say E with a very wide smile, their eyes nearly closed and their cheeks super high. Now, I appreciate the energy and enthusiasm of that mouth position, but it doesn't serve you well at all for speaking. When you let the corners of your mouth go wide, you restrict the amount of resonating space inside your cheeks, which changes the way your voice sounds. Ideally, air is supposed to bounce around inside your mouth and cheeks, picking up resonance that make it sound rich and full. It's a bit like what happens inside a big bass drum after you strike the top. The sound bounces around the interior space and is shaped by it. When you widen the corners of your mouth, it's as though you've taken away the sides of the drum. The sound is nasal, flat, brassy, and tinny. To correct the too wide habit, try this. Put your index fingers on the corners of your mouth. Now push your lips out just a bit so that they're slightly pursed. Now start the alphabet again, or tell me what you're going to have for dinner tonight. And as you speak, don't let your lips go any wider than their starting position. Keep the corners of your mouth in. That's what your fingers are there to help with. Tonight for dinner, I would really love to have pasta. Last night, I broke out of my vegetarian mode and I had a huge steak. So today, no meat. This week, no meat. Next year, no meat. Okay, now you try it. I know you may believe that you have to stretch your lips wide to say E, but that's not true. To prove that to yourself, say OO and hold your lips in that position. OO. Now say E, E. Keep your lips the same. OO. Keep your lips there. Now say E, E. You can make the E sound with OO lips. Listen to me. OO, E. And you can get out of the habit of making your lips so wide every time you speak. The payoff for practicing with this is substantial. You'll love the rich tones it adds to your voice, and you'll notice how dramatically all of that nasality and brassiness will fade. Another reason to control your mouth position is to avoid or correct specific accents or regionalisms. If you're from the South and you want to have that accent, well, that's great. But if the South that you're from is only Southern California, well, maybe you shouldn't speak that way. I remember a woman came to me with a huge Southern accent problem. She was an economics professor at a major Ivy League college. She told me that her students just didn't seem to take her seriously. It had gotten to the point that students would approach her with a graded test and then try to renegotiate to a higher grade. They actually believed that they could bully her into giving them a better grade. After I spent a few minutes listening to her, I realized why the students were feeling that way. She was born and raised in the South and not only had a huge, thick Southern Belle accent, she also spoke very softly and very breathy. Here was an attractive young woman that was obviously very smart. She was proud of her background and where she was from, and yet she had no clue that her voice was making her seem weak to her students, and that her voice was the one thing standing in the way of her huge desire to be the dean of that particular school. As I've mentioned in an earlier session, when you speak with a very breathy tone, your listeners assume that you're less intelligent, less powerful, more interested in frivolity than finance. She was already dealing with the fact that the collegiate economics field was dominated by men and that there's only a tiny handful of female economics professors in the country. Not only was she not male, she sounded about as female as you can get. Along with her accent and the breathy voice, she spoke really, really slow. I can only believe that the students in her class were picturing her in a hammock with a mint julep instead of with a dry erase board and a big red Sharpie marker. With specific vocal exercises, I went about fixing the air problem and the volume problem, and I also helped her fix the pace problem. Remember, I said that she was speaking way too slowly. Now her voice was strong and clear and bright, which left me with the one thing I needed to address, the amount of her accent. The first step was me getting her to stop going wide with the corners of her mouth. When we let the corners of our mouth go wide, we end up distorting the sounds of the vowels. This distortion effect is a large component of what accents are all about. Think of your average accent from Great Britain. If you take the word not and say it with the corners of your mouth in a normal position, it comes out not. Try it. If you, however, brought the corners of your mouth in as if you were about to say ooh and then kept them there and said it, it would sound like this, not. You'd sound like you were more from England, even if you were not from England. Therefore, I firmly advise you to monitor the wide mouth position and stay away from using it so much. Some people just have a naturally wide mouth position. That's fine. You can still learn to push your lips out a bit when you speak. That'll force the corners of the mouth to come in a bit to a more natural sounding position. It might take a while, but you'll get used to it. I want to talk to you a little bit about eye contact. The goal of a great speaker is to communicate on a completely real, honest level with his listeners. The finest speakers that I've ever heard made me feel as though they were talking to me alone, even if I was in a room full of people. In fact, they made just about everyone in that room feel that they were part of an intimate exchange. So how is that accomplished? Through the proper use of eye contact. Direct eye contact for more than 10 seconds can often make a listener acutely uncomfortable and can make them feel challenged or threatened. But specific eye contact can energize the listener and you. If you're in a one-on-one situation, I suggest you use a technique I call the 8-to-2 ratio. Look at the person you're speaking to and connect for about 8 seconds. Look them straight in the eyes. Then, after 8 seconds, look down slightly, as if you were thinking or looking inside of yourself for a moment. Then look right back at them for another 8 seconds or so, and then look down again. Understand? Now make sure that you're not looking to the left or to the right of that person when you disengage for your 2 seconds. When you do that, it makes the person think that there's something going on behind them to the left or the right, and it makes them want to turn back and see what the heck you're looking at. Many people think that you shouldn't look someone right in the eyes, that it might be too confrontational, like a dog ready to fight. However, I say that's a bunch of bunk. I'm sick and tired of people not looking me in the eyes when they're speaking to me. Besides, if the person you're speaking with gets uncomfortable during the 8 seconds, they can look away. When that happens, I just feel even more empowered, like they're too weak to stand the power of my gaze. That 8-to-2 ratio is for one-on-one communication in close proximity, within about 5 feet. But if you're speaking to a larger group of people, the rules change to what I call the 8-second shift. Go ahead, look directly at your audience and pick 3 main areas to focus on. 1, the center of the audience. 2, the right side of the audience. 3, the left side of the audience. Your eye contact should be divided up as follows. The center of the audience gets about 2/3 of your attention, and the right and the left side split evenly the remaining 1/3. When you're directing your attention toward one section, make direct eye contact with one individual in that section. Hold that contact for about 8 seconds, and then make direct eye contact with someone else right next to that person. Keep going from person to person to person for about 8 seconds each, until you move your focus to another section of the room. Remember that with the separation between you and your audience, they don't realize you're looking at one person for 8 seconds. They think you're looking in the general vicinity of that person, and there are obviously more people in that area. And when it's time to change to another section, just do the same thing. There are a number of presenters who simply don't like to look right into the eyes of their listeners. It makes them too nervous. If you're one of those people, I strongly suggest that you spend more time with my session on stage fright, because you're missing the boat. Those people in the audience, they're your friends, and they love you. Why wouldn't you want to look into the eyes of someone who loves you? Anyway, if you're still too shy to make that happen right now, let me give you a little technique that'll help you. And it'll fool the audience into thinking that you're actually looking right into their eyes anyway. It's a little technique I call talk to the head. If I was at least 5 feet away from you and looking at your forehead, you would think that I was looking at your eyes. If I was looking at the hair on your head, you would still think that I was looking at your eyes. And if I was looking at your chin, you would still think that I was looking at your eyes. Try this with a friend, and you'll see that I'm actually telling you the truth. So, until you conquer stage fright, feel free to simply look at their foreheads, and the look from their eyes will have no chance of hurting or distracting you. I still, however, want you to do the 8-second shift and concentrate on the 3 separate areas of the audience. I gave a presentation to a small group of business executives recently, and I noticed that there were a couple of smiling, energetic faces who seemed enthusiastic and very happy to meet me. A couple more were withdrawn and shy, as though they were extremely apprehensive about what I might ask them to do. And the rest of the group fell somewhere in between. As I talked, I made frequent eye contact with the excited members of the group, which seemed to just raise their level of interest and gave me the positive feedback and energy that I was looking for. But I also took care to look at the faces of the more reticent members of the group and made an effort to connect with their eyes. I wanted them to feel just as important as the more excited members. Small presentations like this are more conversational. You really have a chance to see your audience's reaction up close and to address questions and concerns as you see them just flash right across the listeners' faces. It's a great opportunity, and you can grab it and use it if you reach out of yourself by using eye contact. You don't need to stare, but look. Be curious. Be curious about how your message is being perceived. Open yourself up to others' feelings and the nonverbal messages they're sending. You'll gain valuable information. Let's talk a little bit about posture. Aside from looking strong and comfortable and in touch with your body, one of the main reasons posture is so important has to do with providing an unobstructed pathway for the air to get into the lungs. So, first, stand up straight with your feet about shoulder width apart. Roll your head around to ease any tension that you might be feeling in your neck. Then, hold your head level with your chin parallel to the ground, not tipped up or down. Let your shoulder blades kind of slide towards the center of your back so that they move a little back and down. This position really helps the rib cage get out of the way so that the air easily moves into the lungs, which is what you want. Slumping or even rounding over your shoulders slightly collapses the rib cage and keeps the muscles between the ribs from expanding to accommodate that extra air that's trying to get into the lungs. With the proper alignment, we look like we're more physically at ease. Now, bend your knees slightly. Just think like you're taking the kinks out of a garden hose so that water can flow out easily. You're creating an open road for the air to get out. Sure, it is possible to keep talking when you slump, but it takes a whole lot more effort. Let me show you what happens to the voice when the rib cage gets in the way. Get back into that good posture with your chest up and your shoulders back and down. It's okay if you're sitting right now in the car, as long as you keep your chest up and your shoulders back and down. Count slowly from 1 to 10, and as you count, start to round your shoulders over more and more as if you were doing a sit-up. Listen. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Make sure you move slowly, so you'll notice that as you get farther and farther down, your voice begins to close up. Haven't you ever spoken with someone who had bruised or broken ribs? That's what they sound like. They can't get enough air in or volume out. Go ahead. You try it now. Start up straight and then roll your shoulders all the way down. Go ahead. Try it. Now, that doesn't feel good, does it? Also, if you try to take a deep breath when you're in that slumped over position, you would feel that the air was pretty much blocked. Slight slumping and slouching won't constrict your voice completely, but it can still definitely get in the way. If you pay attention to how your body is aligned, it'll help you eliminate some of the muscle tension you feel when you speak. Have you ever heard of the Alexander technique? Well, they've got a lot of good ideas. One of which is that our bodies were designed to move and perform without pressure. If you check out a little toddler in action, you'll see an erect spine, free joints, and a large head, all balancing effortlessly on a very small neck. When we're little, our posture is incredible. But somehow along the way, we put unwanted pressure on the body, exerting more force than we need to for even the simplest acts: standing, sitting, speaking. Paying attention to the alignment of the head and the spine can help correct the body's overall coordination and bring us back into balance. And once we find balance, the airflow can easily get in and out of our bodies, and that helps all kinds of things, especially your voice.